Hi, this is Matt Maser, Patreon supporter. This episode of IVND is brought to you by supporters like me.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this, the 399th episode of the IVMV podcast. On this episode, we're going to recap the Cubs series win over the Pirates, and we'll look at some of the individual performances from the series. We'll talk about things heating up with the Cubs rivalry with the Pirates. I guess that's a thing. We have some scary stat of the week, internet muscle flexes, and Katie Day has produced a different version of her song by the lakeside. It is public tomorrow, but you will hear it first here on the IVMV podcast. And we have a special deal for listeners that purchased the song. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy
and Kurt.
If you're looking for Cubs tickets this season, the first place you need to go is SeatGeek. Most ticket websites are confusing, and they pile on huge fees when you check out. Well, that's not how SeatGeek operates. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. Identify the games that you're interested in, and you can set alerts so they will let you know when the prices go down for the tickets for that game. You can pick your seats that you want and even see what the views from those seats are. SeatGeek also has a rating system that shows you the best deals for that particular game. And like I said, they're upfront and honest about the pricing and the prices of their tickets. The amount you see when you're searching is the price that you're going to pay. And for listeners of our podcast, SeatGeek is offering you a $20 rebate on your first purchase, and this is how you get that $20. Download the free SeatGeek app, and then tap on Settings, and then add a promo code. Add the promo code IVY, that's all capital letters, IVY, and then after you make your first purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20. I got a $20 check in the mail, and that's always a nice thing, money in the mail. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code IVY today. And just a reminder, we have an announcement to make tomorrow night. A shared announcement with the Sun Ranto podcast and Danny Rocket. It's an event, and that's all I'm going to tell you. And we will make the announcement via Blab if it's working for us, which it hasn't worked 2 weeks in a row now. And then we'll also put the audio from that announcement in the podcast feed. So if you want to watch it live, I will put the link to the Blab in the show notes, but if it's not working again, then you can go to ivmb.com/live and we'll do it there. So we will go live at 8 p.m. Monday night. One more thing here. If you're in the Quad City area and you're watching the live broadcast or listening right after we publish this episode, I will be on Channel 8 WQAD tonight to talk about the Cubs. And I only messed up one thing. But unlike our episodes, if you mess up on TV, it is truly no edits. So I messed up one thing, and it was like right at the very beginning. And other than that, I felt like it was maybe my best performance on there, my best appearance. But I got mixed up. And like before we went live, we were talking about how like April was an easier month, and then May was a tougher month for the Cubs. You know, and so we were kind of talking about that, and like the first question had something to do with that. And then I was like, yeah, April was the tougher month for the Cubs. I was like, and then like you can see it like as I'm talking, I'm like, wait a minute, what am I saying? No, I'm totally wrong. And I was like, 95% of the people watching this aren't going to catch
well,
that.
Well, Cardinals fans were agreeing with you. They were like, yeah, yep, they played us.
Yep. right. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. It was kind of fun. And so that's on at 10:35 tonight, Sunday night on Channel 8 in the Quad Cities. So on our last episode, we talked about the fact that a lot of Cubs fans were freaking out after losing two games in a row. The team responded to those losses by just continuing to kick the crap out of the Pirates. And I guess it's a crisis averted. Everybody can be calm now. The Cubs won a series. So the Cubs are 5-1 against the Pirates this season. And how about this record against the NL Central? They are 15-3 against their division. How nuts is that? I mean, that's not like, you know, oh, we had a good week and we're 7-1. like 15-3. That's just domination. And they've played
boggling.
Right, and they've played everybody in the division already at least once. And with the Brewers coming up, you can only assume that that's going to, you know, be an even better record.
I'm just surprised how long it took the Pirates to beat the Cubs.
No.
It makes sense that it came today with, I mean, I figured Cole's last start against the Cubs was a little bit anomalous as far as just his, you know, his performance in general.
Right.
But they finally beat the Cubs. I thought it would come sooner.
It's kind of funny too. And with the, I guess, drama or whatever, you know, with the Pirates players and then their media, Pittsburgh media and stuff and broadcasters. I mean, like, it kind of feels like the Cardinals may not be the most, you know, the Cardinals may not, those might not be the most heated series this season, that it seems like these games with the Pirates could be a little bit more chippy and a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? Not
potential for,
well, not only that, but just like the pressure, like, you know, it seems like these are the games that are going to be a little more, competitive and, you know, kind of like the playoff atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, playoff atmosphere at Wrigley, but remember when they played in Pittsburgh, there were empty seats, you know? So I don't know. I'm going to say this, a lot of this feels a bit manufactured, by, I don't know who. I won't point the finger at anybody. It just feels a little artificial this early in the season, and also that it's sort of like people are trying to quickly say, well, you know, maybe the Cardinals aren't the number one rivalry. Well, in my mind, they still are.
Yeah.
And I think it's, yeah, they, you know, maybe it'll be a little more chippy, like you said, but I just don't, it just doesn't, I don't know. I don't like all this, whatever.
Tension, acrimony. Right,
yeah.
Well, yeah. I think it's a good, you know, one good thing is that it's not really coming from the Cubs side. You know, it's the Pirates that I think really have been embarrassed by the Cubs up in, you know, with losing every game of the season to the Cubs so far, you know, 5-1 except for today, and then losing the play-in game last year. And it really kind of seems like, it almost seems like the Pirates are kind of like artificially manufacturing this just to try to rally the troops, or, you know, just kind of like they're like placing a chip on their shoulder,
or to, and also to stay relevant, you know, when you get kicked around like that,
right,
saying you're their rival, I suppose, means something.
Well, and
I can also, I mean, give some credit. I mean, if your roles were reversed, like, that must be incredibly frustrating to get knocked out of the wild card and then to get dominated this early.
Right. And it wasn't just like the Cubs won five games in a row. Like, they kicked the crap out of them. I mean, I mean, it seems like I don't in the first series, I mean, didn't the Cubs win by like four runs or five runs every game? I don't have it in front of me, but it seems
like 7-2, 8-2, something like that. Each game.
They had beaten them by at least four runs every game.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think in looking at this Pirates series, this weekend, you know, guys, I think we really nailed our predictions. We knew that the Cubs would just batter Liriano in this series. And, you know, Liriano, he went 4 2/3 innings, gave up 8 runs on 9 hits, 4 walks. 3 of those were home runs. And so I think we nailed it, guys.
Yeah. Man, they were overdue to hit Liriano. I was glad to see that.
Maybe we put too much stock in the game where we watched Liriano kind of dominate the batting order.
It could be.
But that wasn't his only performance where he did that against the Cubs.
And I kind of made the comment, too, about, like, pitchers with really great changeups. And I texted this to you guys during that game that, like, I know the Cubs have these young hitters, and basically any hitters have a hard time with a pitcher who's got a really great changeup. And then, you know, in a couple of weeks, they blow up Scherzer and Liriano. And so, you know, there's some marginal analysis for you.
Well, you know what, though? And that's the kind of stuff that I'm really enjoying this season. The Cubs haven't done well against Liriano, and I think it's kind of a testament to the scouting that this organization does and how much talent this team has. You know, they've really knocked around some top level pitching this season. They beat up on Garrett Cole in the last series against the Pirates. Like you mentioned, Scherzer last weekend, now Liriano. And I think that success against these good pitchers, that's not a coincidence. And I think that the Cubs have, you know, quote unquote, computer nerds doing their work, and the team is doing a great job of implementing the plan that they have against that particular pitcher. And it really seems to be working.
Yeah. Yeah. The preparation's certainly there.
Yeah. So as far as the series goes, I mean, you know, kind of what we've done recently is kind of look at the good and the bad. And I don't really feel like there was too much bad in this series, but were there any individual performances that kind of stood out to you guys?
I think we could, I mean, that, it goes back further than just this series, but I think we can look at Hayward offensively. He's really turning it around lately. He had a string of offers there before the National Series, where that's when everybody started coming down on him offensively. And of course, throwing in the money and how much he's making and how terrible he's starting. And he's, you know, a slow starter. He said that himself. But then in the last seven games, he's 10 for 28. And that's 357 average. And he's got five walks and a 455 OBP. So again, that goes back a little further than the Pirates series. But he certainly kept it going in this Pirates series. And I think we have mentioned before, too, like we weren't too worried about him because he keeps driving the ball. Like he's making good contact. Corey, I think you mentioned his BABIP being a little bit low. You know, all the signs pointed to this happening. And so now it's kind of nice to see the balls drop in and he's getting hits, so, and taking walks. So he's right. Doing what Hayward does.
Right. And I mean, you know, he's historically started off slow. And if you watch him at the plate, I think if it'd be really easy with the way that, you know, his batting stance and his motions and stuff, I think it would be really easy to have your timing off just a little bit. And I kind of wonder if that's not, hasn't been part of his problem too. There's a lot, you know, kind of the same thing with Zobrist. There's like a lot of like small motions that I think is all part of their like timing mechanisms. And I think that it, like those things could be off just a little bit. Cause I mean, that thing that he does with his elbows and, you know, whatever Zobrist like does with his
in kind of thing.
Right. And I think if your timing is off just a little bit, then, you know, you're maybe not getting that hard contact, but it seems like he's starting to warm up, which, you know, you add that in with already, you know, a lineup that was already scoring, you know, 7, 8, 9 runs a game, then that's a recipe for even more runs.
Well, and I think the other thing to remember about Hayward is like for the people who are judging his value based on batting average and home runs, you're going to be disappointed. And, mm-hmm. you know, we should move beyond that. And the other great thing is that even in his slump, he still played incredible defense.
Right.
His arm is amazing. That's sort of like the standard for him. And then the offense is going to come at some point.
Right.
Right. Yeah. The home runs are going to come.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Well, and yeah, but not like a huge.
They don't really need him to hit a ton of home runs.
Right. Yeah. And you know, if it comes down to like looking at how many home runs he's produced and, you know, maybe his batting average right now, I mean, I don't know, let Cardinals fans look at that stuff and, you know, kind of criticize and things, you know what I mean? I mean, like let's right. understand like where his value is and what he is good at and how he is contributing to this team, and other things are going to come around. You know, he's never, you know, how many Cardinals fans did you see like after the Cardinals threw more money at him than the Cubs, he signs with the Cubs and all of a sudden they're like, oh, he only hit, you know, 10 or 15 home runs, whatever. Oh, he's not worth that much money. I mean, it's just kind of like a not really understanding where a player's value, you know, comes from. So I don't know. Let them do that. There's no reason for Cubs fans to.
If I were a Cardinals fan, though, that'd be a funny, like, trolling thing is to start, like, a Sean-O-meter, Hayward-O-meter, like, sign.
Just how many home runs he's hit.
Which is still zero.
Right. Yeah.
He came close. He almost hit one out, I think, in Friday's game. It was very close, but, yeah, it'll be there. It'll be there eventually. For me, like, I was pretty impressed. I've been impressed by Russell. I mean, it's hard not to be because he hit a two-run homer on Saturday, and then on Friday he hit that three-run homer that put them ahead of the Pirates at that point in the game. And so he's starting to hit for some power. Russell himself was quoted as saying, "I felt I was a home run hitter. It's just tapping into that home run power, and it's just being a little more confident in barreling the ball and not being shy swinging the bat." He hasn't looked shy swinging the bat at all.
No.
But it's not just homers either. I mean, he leads the Cubs when he's batting with runners in scoring position. He's hitting, you know, he's driving in a lot of runs. He's the leader with 27 RBIs on the Cubs as well. And so he's, I don't know, he looks awesome. And he, okay. It's looking like he's going to be the superstar that people think he can be, or, you know, at least showing signs of it. And he's also walking at a 14% rate, which is crazy. And one thing that inflates that, I guess, is that he's been intentionally walked four times due to his, you know, his typical position in the lineup. But, still, I mean, the dude's been pretty good.
I think that home run that he hit on Friday, right? He hit it Friday, right? The 3-run homer. That was like the first time I've seen, like, it seems like normally his home runs are just kind of like his normal swing and he just happens to make good contact and it goes out. Like, that was the first swing that I've kind of seen him have, like, a home run swing. Like, especially if you watch, they showed it from a different angle and in kind of slow motion. And it was like the first time it seems like he's really gotten around on the ball and just slugged it. Like, that's what it was like a home run swing. And
Was that the one into the left field bleachers, into the strong wind?
Yeah.
I mean, he killed that ball. In that same game, that was the one where Rizzo hit the home run, right? I saw somebody on Twitter, I wish I could give credit to this. They were saying it was the most wind-aided home run hit at Wrigley Field this season. Hmm. And the wind added 51 feet to that homer.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's the one. Yeah, okay, it's the homer that Danny Rocket got the picture of, the home run swing. And he got that one so high up in the air that the wind carried it 51 extra feet. Isn't that crazy?
I bet if I could get it that high, I might be able to get one out at Wrigley.
I could probably hit one 300 feet.
You'd have to be batting lefty.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, I think one of the other amazing things, like you just said, he's what, second with 27 RBIs. I mean, how great is it to have you? Like, he's typically been in that 6 or 7 spot.
Right.
6 or 7 hitters got 27 RBIs.
And your shortstop, who's, you know, historically not a strong offensive position. But we also, I got an email that I wanted to mention here on Russell. This came from Jason from New York. And he said that Russell is on pace for 140 plus RBI and 20 plus home runs.
Great. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
How many runs he's driving in. I mean, people are calling him clutch, like a clutch hitter and stuff, which is pretty, you know, kind of ridiculous, we know. But,
he
just seems to have a lot of poise.
Right. He does, especially for being so young. I mean, he's like the youngest of the young, you know. Mm-hmm. It's impressive. I wanted to talk about Soler. We talked quite a bit about Soler on our last episode. And then after that episode, Epstein came out and said that Chicago is where Soler needs to be, which is the opinion that the three of us hold, I think, based on our discussion on the last episode. I kind of like this quotation from Joe Maddon. He said, "It's part of development. It's part of making a young player into a good major league player. There's a lot of patience involved," which I think is exactly what a lot of Cubs fans don't have. For some inexplicable reason, is patience. You know, patience is required. And with a team that's playing at a historic level, I think that this is the perfect time for one guy to be developing. And, you know, I think if the team was scuffling along and one player was just a black hole in the lineup, then sure. But, I mean, my God, they're winning. They're winning big. And so, what a time to let Soler work on stuff. So he got into the first two games of this series with the Pirates. On Friday, he went 1-for-3 with a walk. He had one strikeout. And then on Saturday, he went 0-for-3 with a strikeout. But, you know, I'm glad that the Cubs plan to let him develop and figure stuff out at the major league level. And I look forward to watching that development. And we've seen what he can do. And he's still doing some of those things. And so it'll be nice to hopefully watch everything fall into place.
Yeah, I think he's gonna work his way out of it, and Artie can kind of see it.
Yeah. How about Ross in this series?
Yeah, Ross. Well, Ross has hit his 99th home run of his career off of Liriano.
Is that number three for the season?
Yeah, that's number three for the season. And I expect number 100 to come soon. And so that would be a cool moment for him. But yeah, he's been good lately. I mean, and he's got that increased playing time due to Montero's absence. But in his last four games, he's scored two times. He's driven in four, walked twice. I mean, he's been a good presence on the team with his bat too, which in the past we've talked about just that the bat has been a zero to, you know, very frequently, but this season hasn't been the case. I mean, he's actually, you can't really take him for granted in the lineup.
Yeah. You know, I do want to mention something though with Ross. I thought in Friday's game he's maybe started showing some signs that he's kind of tired behind the plate. You know, there was one stolen base where the ball slipped out of his hand when he went to throw to second base. And
that's the one where Addison had to jump really high to try to catch it.
No, that was actually the next one. There was one where like the ball landed behind him, like he went to throw and it just slipped out of his hand.
Oh, okay. I missed that. I didn't see that one.
Yeah. And then there was one where he threw it, you know, he threw it. That was today's that he threw into center field.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, and he said himself, like, he's not an everyday catcher. You know? I mean, he is a backup and he knows himself pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. In Friday's game, too, he had another one that he threw and it was probably about 5 feet short. And just kind of skipped into center field. And those things are going to happen. I mean, you know, the amount of time that a catcher has to get rid of the ball, it's like split second. So you're really kind of hoping to get a good grip on the ball with like, you can't double grip, you know, you can't like, you just have to get a good grip and you have to make a good throw. And so I don't really think it's like an indicator, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I think the Cubs have put a lot on Ross lately. And, you know, he can play ligaments be damned, but those ligaments are still almost four decades old. So, I
mean, he looks like a 39-year-old sometimes. But that being said, too, he's shown a lot of life and looked pretty spry, you know, more often than not this season, too.
Right.
Yeah. With his snap throws at first and stuff like that. And, but yeah, I mean, maybe like these past few days, he's starting to show the increased workload a little bit. Which is the good news, because though, that Montero's back.
Right.
Montero played in Saturday's game and went 0-for, but he was hit by a pitch and scored a run in that game. But he had been out with a lower back tightness / soreness. I'm sure like when he was getting his back worked on, whoever was working on him asked him to slide his pants down. He played three games with Iowa. He played two at catcher and one at DH, and he was quoted as saying he ended up having to block a lot of balls in his two catcher starts, and he said, quote, that he felt pretty good doing it and that he was, quote, good to go. So I don't know, like, felt pretty good doing it. Didn't sound like a ringing endorsement for, like, total convalescence, but still, I mean, I guess he's good to go, as he says, and so he'll be able to spell, you know, Ross, so Ross doesn't have to shoulder the load he's been doing the past week. So that's good news. And I mean, Montero's bat in the lineup is a little bit better than Fedorovich, but we're glad to have him back.
Yeah. Yeah. I did notice in his first start back, he was shaking a little rust off, which is to be expected, but yeah, it's definitely good to have him back.
Yeah. And other minor news, to free up a roster spot for him, Kalish was DFA'd and, he's already been outrighted to Iowa, according to the transactions page. So, you know, he contributed in a few small ways in his time up, and it was good to see him. I mean, I feel bad for Kalish. The dude has had so many injuries in his career. You know, former first round pick, and it'd be good if he can kind of have a good stretch of health here and be able to contribute to the Cubs or maybe even another team. I almost would be happy to see him be able to go somewhere else and get more playing time.
Yeah. And then the pitchers. I think there's a lot of good stuff from the pitchers in this series.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they started off with Hamill going against Liriano, which, you know, given how Hamill's pitch didn't look like a favorable matchup towards the Pirates. I mean, it looked fairly even. So, and Hamill came out and outdueled him. And, of course, the offense, like we've talked about, got after Liriano. So Hamill pitched 6.2 and gave up 8 pretty scattered hits and never really got hurt. He just gave up the 1 earned run and then 2 total runs. He struck out 8. And then ended up, Cahill came in and did give up a couple runs in the 9th, but you know, I think they had like a 7-run lead at the time, so it wasn't too threatening. And one of those was that McCutchen home run. So, you know, Hamill moves to 5-0 and has kind of continued to do what he's been doing, and hopefully that continues the rest of the season. So we've still got first half Hamill, and I hope he keeps it up. And then the second game was the Arrieta start, and he pitched 8. And gave up the 2 runs, 2 walks, and struck out 11. And this is one where after the game, Len and JD both, mostly Len, was tweeting like that looked like Arrieta's best start outside of that one inning. He had his best stuff. He kind of had a rough spot in the 4th, and the Pirates got those 2 runs. But after he gave up those 2 runs, he didn't give up another hit. And then he left, and Grimm came in the 9th and pitched a perfect 9th. So that was good to see. Him back to his old self. So, but yeah, I will say that 4th inning was pretty nerve wracking to sort of see him get bumped a little bit, but then to see him turn it around and finish the game with basically a no hitter from that point on was pretty nice. And then of course today, this one stung a little bit, with Lester, went 6.2, just gave up the 2 hits. He had the no hitter through 6. He gave it 1 run, walked 2, and struck out 9. Just didn't get the run support today, you know, and that's been his 2 losses. And so I'm going to jump in here early with my scary stat, because I think to this point we haven't had anything really negative. And this is sort of positive, sort of negative. The result is negative, but the stats are amazing. So these are Lester's 2 losses. He's pitched 14 innings. He's given up 6 hits, just 2 earned runs, walked 4, and struck out 19. And in those 2 losses, the offense have scored 0 runs while he was pitching.
Dang.
So it all comes down to run support for his 2 losses. He should be 6-0. I mean, those are actually 2 of his better starts of the year. I mean, he's been great all year, but you know, you can't look at those starts and say that the guy hasn't been amazing. So,
which is,
you know, that's my scary stat. He's got 2 losses based on 2 earned runs.
Yeah, and the offense has kind of picked him up on a couple of his rougher starts. But, I mean, he's really only had basically 1 kind of rough start this whole season, from what I remember. I mean, the dude's been good this year.
Which is why you don't pay attention to pitchers' wins and losses. Yeah.
But isn't that kind of cool to see, though? Like, he legitimately should or could be 6-0.
Right.
And then you could potentially have a 7-0, a 6-0, and a 5-0 starter.
And also,
if you were getting Hamill run support. Sorry, Corey, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to point out that those 3 pitchers also each have ERAs under 2.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 of the Cubs starting 5 has ERAs under 2. I think that's pretty impressive. This, you know, 6-week, that's something you might expect 2 weeks into the season. But here we are, you know, middle of May. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, heck yeah. And just a little tiny footnote in today's performance is he successfully underhand tossed the ball to first base without tossing the glove as well. And just a little kind of positive sign as far as the first base toss yips.
He should be credited for a win just for that.
Right. I wonder if he puts like Stick'Em in his glove so that when there's a ball hit up the middle, he can act like his gloves, like it's stuck in his glove every time.
He just takes all those little laces out of the glove webbing and it sticks.
Did you guys see how Miggy Mont tweeted after the last time Lester threw the ball and the glove to Rizzo? He was like, trolling Rizzo for having dropped his own glove to catch Lester's glove.
That was pretty funny.
And then he also typed drooped in the tweet instead of dropped. I love Miguel Montero's Twitter so much.
Oh, man.
So good.
Well, before we move on to listener questions here, we did get a few listener questions, but Andy, I'm going to guess that about 99.6% of the people listening to this right now are going to wonder why you talked about sliding off Montero's pants.
Oh, yeah. See, I was kind of hoping to just fly under the radar.
Let's just let it fly. Let's just let him. Yep. Let him you have to tune in for the pre-show and the live broadcast to catch such things.
Yep. Okay, so we did get some questions submitted to us in our Patreon Facebook group, which is a perk to anybody that contributes to our Patreon campaign at any level. And that private Facebook group, you know, in my opinion, I think that is the best conversations as far as Cubs Facebook groups. I belong to some others, and some of them are good, some of them are bad. But I think that I think that our Patreon group is the best. So no offense to the others, but I think the quality of discussion is good, and it's really fun to kind of get to know each other in there, because I think there's like 110 people in there or something. So it's not like a huge group, and everybody kind of gets to know each other. So it's fun. So if you're interested in the Patreon campaign, you can get in at just $1 a month. That's the lowest level. So, and you get stickers for that and everything. So anyway, the first one here comes from Dave from Burlington, Iowa. And he says, what would you be willing to give up for Mike Trout?
this is a tough one to fathom, just because you're not in a position to consider giving up anything because of how good this team is. So it's hard to.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I mean, it just doesn't seem necessary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I was saying. I mean, I've just seen so much like chatter from really bad sports blogs about this. And I love Mike Trout, and I wish he was on the Cubs, but I don't really see how this works. I mean, I don't believe that the Cubs front office has strengthened the system and developed all of the depth and the prospects that they have just to trade it away for one player. I don't see that. And yes, Trout is young, but he's not cheap. He signed with the Angels through 2020, and he makes $16 million this year, $20 million next year, and then $34 million the following 3 years. So unless if the Cubs, they could lock up Bryant or Schwarber soon. Unless they do that, if they don't do that, then the Cubs would have a good amount of flexibility financially with having such a young roster and not locking them up necessarily. But I think for it to work, the Cubs would really have to part with someone like a Bryant or a Schwarber. And honestly, I just don't see a reason for the Cubs to do it. I mean, they aren't one piece short right now. I mean, yes, I would rather see Trout play center field than Fowler, but this just doesn't make sense. Like, I mean, the Cubs have the best team in baseball right now, and they have what should be the best team in baseball for the next 3 to 4 years. And I don't really know why you like mess with what you have to bring in. And I mean, if there is a player you're going to do it for, it's Trout, you know? I mean,
right. So good. I wonder how much longer he is a viable center fielder. I mean, just as a little aside.
Well, I mean, he's still only like 25 or something, young. Right? So,
yeah. Yeah, let's just say whatever it would take to get him is not something that's going to be easy to swallow.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking a few of those guys you've mentioned. I mean,
right.
A couple, you know, it's going to be 2 to 3 of these top-notch young players.
And I think maybe that's something you think about doing if it's like, you know, if the Cubs were like 500 right now or something like that. But like, you have a team that's what, 18 games over 500 in the middle of May. Like
no reason to tinker.
You just don't mess with it.
Yeah, no reason to tinker when you're looking at those numbers.
I think, and I can even give you an example, but I think a team that it would make sense for is somebody that maybe has some depth in the minor leagues and is not necessarily competitive right now, but will be over the next couple of years. You know, one of those like on the cusp, like maybe where the Cubs were a couple years ago. that might make sense, but I don't know. Honestly, I just don't think the Angels are going to trade him.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the Angels have a terrible farm system. So it's like, yeah, you're going to give us two major league ready, current major league players and like half your double A team. Silly what it would take to get him. I don't know, in my head at least.
And they don't need him. I mean, yeah, he'd be great. He'd make them on paper like 125 win team or something. But I just
not get greedy, you know.
I don't think they need him.
Yeah, and it's hard to talk about these things without sounding like you don't recognize how amazing Trout is. Like, we all get it, but just not necessary. You can get your wins in other ways.
I think it really messes with the team. You know, it would really mess with the chemistry of this team. Not, I mean, and I think
Trout's a jerk.
No, I think Trout's probably a good clubhouse guy, but yeah, I think you have these guys that are like, you have this core, and you're going to have to, you would have to break up that core for this. And it just doesn't make sense. I don't think so. Dave has another question here. Do you think our best lineup is Javier Baez at third base and Chris Bryant in left field?
Most certainly defensively. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt the left side of the infield is boss with Javi in there.
Yeah.
Super good. Yeah. So I think so right now. Yeah, for sure.
But how great is it to not have to make that set in stone? I mean, because Bryant played third today, didn't he? So, I mean, it makes more sense defensively, I think. It's certainly more dynamic with Javi in there, but it's nice that, like, well, Bryant can play every once in a while on third, and it doesn't hurt you too much.
Yeah, originally I was in favor of keeping Bryant at third base, but I think that was kind of before, like, Zobrist signed, and, you know, I wanted to see Baez in the lineup as much as possible, and I really like how he plays second base, so I kind of thought that's where he would end up. But right now, I'm enjoying watching him play third. And although he had a few errors this week, but he's just such a smooth infielder. And with him being a different type of batter than he was when he first came up, I'm really enjoying a more strategic Baez at the plate than the Baez that just went up there and swung as hard as he could. And an example of that is he came up either in the bottom of the eighth or the bottom of the ninth. I think he was the first batter, and he tried to bunt for a hit. And if you would have told me 2 years ago that Baez late in a game would try to bunt for a hit, like I just wouldn't really be able to wrap my mind around that.
Yeah. The lone caveat to this is I definitely want Soler to be getting reps and getting play time. Yeah. And so with that alignment, I mean, it kind of leaves him out in the cold, but still, I mean, I think that's the optimal lineup to get the W, to get the Wilbur right now.
Right. Bill from Aurora has a question. Says, does the domination of teams have any real impact on playoff success against them? He says, I think we were 7-1 versus the Mets before the NLCS last year. I think actually they were 7-0.
I think you're right.
Yeah. But man, I'm increasingly convinced that just throw everything out the window come playoff time. It's completely the teams that are playing really well at the moment that are going to end up making deep runs into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's one of the scariest and best things about baseball is that you make the playoffs and you start over, and it's scary, but it's awesome.
That being said, I mean, there are certain things that, you know, as far as the construction of the team and the character of the players that you've chosen to build your team with that do have an impact, no doubt.
Right. But
that's the reason you're in the playoffs in the first place, you know.
But considering, you know, like you, let's say you face the Pirates in LDS or something, and then you're not looking back at the regular season like, yeah, we killed them. No problem. Well, you know, so it's still. Still makes you nervous. I don't think it has any impact.
I agree and I disagree. I think, you know, obviously with the Cubs sweeping the Mets last year, 7-0, and then the tables were turned on the playoffs. I think, I think where it helps is in situations like last year with the Cardinals. The Cardinals owned the Cubs early in the season, and then late in the season, the Cubs went in, punched the Cardinals in the mouth, not literally, in the Labor Day massacre. And at that point, it seemed like the Cubs had the Cardinals on their heels, and the Cubs had all the confidence going into the playoffs in that NLDS series. And I think that the Cubs playing well against particular pitchers could serve them well. Perhaps if the Cubs face Scherzer in the Nationals in the playoffs, Scherzer might be thinking back to when he faced the Cubs and they scored 7 runs in 5 innings last weekend off of him. I mean, I think that there is something to be said about maybe being in the back of a team's mind or in the back of a player's mind. And I kind of feel like that's where they have the Pirates right now. They're in their heads. And so I think in some of those situations, it might help. But I don't know.
I'd probably be better. My late season performance is more telling.
Yeah.
Than season series total.
Yeah, if the Cubs are still thrashing the Pirates later on this season, then that'll probably have more of an impact. Whereas, as opposed to, like, you know, let's say they match up in the playoffs and they're not going to be thinking back to early May or whatever.
Yeah,
but I agree with what Corey said about, like, specific pitchers. Like, you know, right. you can get to Liriano because you did it.
Right.
And you might not in that particular game, but at least you have the confidence that you've done it before.
Right. Like, I mean, let's say for some crazy reason, the Cubs and Pirates, you know, let's say they had to phase off in, like, the one game NL or the one game play-in again for some bizarre reason, and it's Arrieta versus Cole. You know, that's got to be in the back of their minds. And I think that, like, even with the Pirates losing, you know, in Pittsburgh, losing that playoff in 2015, losing that play-in game again, it's almost like I think it's in the back of everybody's minds. You know, the same thing that we experienced the whole 2003 thing for the Cubs and the Bartman thing and everything, like, it was in the back of everyone's minds. I think people carry stuff over, memories and just lack of confidence and stuff like that. So I think, like, that's somewhere where performances during the season could impact the playoffs. But I think you're right. I mean, it's a matter of who's hot. And, you know, look at the Mets. The Cubs beat them in the 7-0 in the regular season, but they had a lot of young pitchers, just like the Cubs had a lot of young batters that are able to kind of play with a short memory or whatever. And I mean, that's what the Mets did in the playoffs. They just kind of came in and dominated.
That's a good point. It's probably partly due to the Mets roster construction and the type of players that they had. Also, not just, you know, I mean, the fact that they were able to do to the Cubs what they did.
Right. Yeah.
Having been beaten down by the Cubs in the regular season.
Yeah. Okay, so we haven't really talked about this yet, but, well, we did a little bit, I think, about the rivalry issue and everything. But Dawn from Plainfield, she says, how ridiculous are the accusations that of Pirates players and fans right now over players hit by pitches? I get it's just frustration talking, but I'd rather not lose my best players in a stupid bench clearing brawl. And then also to go along with that, David from Alexandria, Virginia says, what's your perspective on the beef versus the Pirates? Do you think this will be forgotten in a few seasons, or are we seeing the start of a perpetual slow burn like the Red Sox Rays? So, I mean,
it'll be forgotten in a few series. I mean, right now
I don't know.
You just play these guys back. Well, okay. Forgotten's not the right word. It's a little bit inflamed right now because we've just played them twice in a very short span.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's a bit worked up, and you're going to go play a bunch of other teams and then come back and play the Pirates. And yeah, the rivalry and the heatedness is still going to be there, but it's not going to be quite as tense as it is right now.
Well, I think it won't take long for it to ramp up. Again, I haven't really seen anything from the Cubs I haven't seen anything of them, like, running their mouths about anything or saying anything or giving any billboard material or anything. It just seems like it's all coming from the Pirates side. And I think if you see they play, I think the two teams don't play again for another month. But if that series starts off with the Cubs winning 2 games, I think we'll see this stuff flare up again. And I mean, look at, you know, Rodriguez last year freaking out on the Gatorade cooler. I mean, this is a team that apparently kind of like doesn't really seem to handle, you know, frustration very well. And then I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was like, I don't know if it's like one of their broadcasters or if it's just a media guy. Like yesterday on Twitter, he was like, I'm not advocating, I don't advocate violence, but somebody needs to hit Arrieta in the chin. It's like, well, yeah. Yes, you are advocating violence. That's exactly. Lock. What's that?
So stupid.
I was just going to say, like, I think he said something about he wouldn't mind seeing Locke throw it Arrieta's chin or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, which is just crazy.
Stupid.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you guys saw it, but did you see what Gerrit Cole said today after the game? Mm-mm. He said something about he doesn't think the Cubs are the best team in baseball. Like, okay, so basically you're
that's really dumb.
Yeah, so basically you're okay, so what you're saying is the team that you're 8 games behind in the middle of May and is they've beaten you 5-1, you don't like you think there's someone else better than them, which makes you actually worse. So that's why I just think they can't and you know what, I'll be honest, it's got to be really frustrating. We've talked about this. It's got to be really frustrating for these Pirates, you know, and for Pirates fans. They had 20 years or 22 years or something like that of ending below
straight losing seasons.
Yeah, of ending their seasons below 500. I mean, that's brutal. And then they finally, you know, get a good GM, get a good front office, finally put together something, and it's right when the Cardinals are good. And then right when the Cubs are good. And I mean, like, that's got to be frustrating. There has to be a lot of frustration going on in that clubhouse. But
and it's being manifested all the way up to the 25-man roster of the Pirates. I mean,
yeah.
And it's when you see, you know, starting pitchers saying stuff like that, it just sort of makes you feel like, well, why are you worried about this? I mean, I know reporters are going to ask you questions, but you don't have to answer them. You know, like, it just stay out of the fray and play baseball.
Right. Yeah. And I think the Cubs are taking the perfect approach of just playing baseball, you know, just kind of a nice position to be in, you know, just to be able to like beat up on teams and just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They won one game. They're 5-1. So they can hang their hat on that one.
And they almost didn't win one game. So,
well, right. I mean, yeah. And the last question here, I think this is the last one. It's from Stuart in St. Louis. He says, does Albert Almora's improved offense this year, he's slashing .341, .364, .504, change your perception about him? I think his defense has always been major league, but now with his bat improving through 30 games this year and the second half of last year, do you think we could put him in center field this year and push Fowler to left? I know it's still a smallish sample size, but if he keeps the same-ish slash line for another couple months, what else does he need to do?
I think what else he needs to do is spend most of a year in AAA.
Yeah.
Because, you know, AAA pitching is drastically different from Major League hitting. And also, I don't want to say that and not give him credit for what he's done offensively, because that's been our gripe on him, is that we all know his defense is amazing. He needed to develop his offense, and that seems to be happening. So, you know, props to him. But I think he needs to do it for most of a season in AAA. I don't think there's any reason to make a move like that and bump Fowler when, you know, he still needs some time.
And there's already a little bit of a logjam, you know. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, if he continues to play as well as he's playing, you know, that'll make the Cubs feel probably a little bit better at seeing Fowler walk away after this season, right. Perhaps.
Well, and I agree with you guys. I mean, I also see Almora as being like, I think he's a type of player. Like, if people are kind of freaking out about Soler and some Cubs fans have kind of like been negative about Hayward, if that's the case, then I don't, you know, Almora will most likely struggle offensively when he comes up. I mean, I think it's just kind of inevitable, and he doesn't have some of those redeeming qualities that some of the other guys have. Like, you know, his walk rate is 4.2%, which is really bad compared to the rest of the Cubs lineup, when you have everybody hovering around like, what, 10, 12%. He doesn't take a lot of walks. He doesn't strike out an absurd amount. He actually doesn't strike out very much, but you know, I just think he's the kind of guy that could come up here and he could have, you know, he could really struggle at the plate and not be getting on base. And I think people could turn on him. And if you don't see the benefits of Hayward's defense, I think you're going to have a hard time seeing the benefits, because if that happens, and let's say Soler's playing well and he ends up kind of taking time away, you know, I think he will get called up this September. And if he's taking time away from Fowler, you know, you're going to have people freaking out. I think his role this season will be, he'll come up in September and he'll be kind of like a late game defensive substitution. Mm-hmm. He'll kind of be there, but I don't see him playing a big role. And honestly, I wouldn't be, if I think, I don't know. It's so hard to say, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked if he even started off in Iowa again next year. You know, we know that Hayward could play center field if they don't sign Fowler again. And Schwarber's back, and you know, I don't even know if he would be back at the beginning of the year, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, I don't see, Almora is not Chris Bryant and he's not Anthony Rizzo. He's not, you know, he's not Addison Russell. He's just a different type of player.
And he's not even like leadoff hitter material either, though. That's another part of the problem, I think.
Yeah.
Is because you would kind of like him to have a higher OBP a little bit, you know, maybe fewer strikeouts. I don't know.
Yeah. I think, and you know, you look at his high batting average and everything right now, and it's worth mentioning that his BABIP is almost 370. So it is a little bit high. That could, you know, account for some of his high batting average, but he is absolutely playing well. It's a pleasant surprise. I think I wouldn't have guessed him to be hitting 341 at this point in the season, even though it is early, but at the same time, I really look forward to him being called up because I love his defense and I look forward to seeing that.
Oh man. Yeah. It's so good.
Anything else to add on that, guys?
Nope.
Okay. So Kurt, you already gave us a scary stat of the week. Do you guys have any internet muscle flexes?
Oh. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I got two.
Oh man. Okay. Do either?
Sorry. I have one. Let me start off with this one, as I wanted to just mention that, you know, we talked about this a little bit before the broadcast, is that Roughneck Odor punched Jose Bautista today. And I saw in one of my Facebook groups that somebody noted that the Rangers fans started chanting USA when that happened.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
So I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't have a hard time believing that it's true. And I just think that was the internet muscle flex section was a good time to mention it.
showing those Canadians who's boss.
Yeah. Baseball park muscle flex.
Man. Okay. Well, I'll do one. Here Kurt, you said you have two.
Yeah. Why don't I start? Okay, I'll start with this one, which is just more of the same, but I couldn't believe I saw it and read it. And both of mine come from the same picture on Instagram, which is a picture of Anthony Rizzo as like a 3-year-old, which I think is important to note given the comments. It was like the Cubs said something like, "Hey, if this picture of Anthony Rizzo as a little kid doesn't cheer you up, you know, something like that."
Because it didn't cheer somebody up. Oh, no.
This person said, "I can't believe we sucked on purpose for 5 years to get blanked by a couple of bum pitchers." There's more. Theo needs to pack his SHIT and take his dumbass plan with him.
I mean, 18 games over 500.
I mean, we've seen this before, and I just could not believe that today of all days,
That stuff is still there.
That's
and on the picture of baby Rizzo.
Yep. And it's 3-year-old Anthony Rizzo, ironically, wearing a USA jersey.
That's so good, man. My other one is so what is this article? It doesn't matter. This guy posted on the Cubs Facebook group, "Still only on my fingers to count the L column. I'll start to be concerned when I have to use my toes." You're going to be concerned when you have to add that 11th loss. Like, you have to, oh man, I have to add my big toe here. This is real cause for concern.
We're going to have to call Alphonse. Help me count some losses.
Oh man.
Did you have one for me?
Sure, I'll read mine. My mom sent me this one. She found it, and I think that like it is a I'm trying to think of how to kind of lay the groundwork for this one, but I think I'm just going to read it instead. So, person number one says, "If we lose again, Madden has to be on the hot seat." Like, if we lose again, like if the Cubs lose any more this year,
I just can't help believe these people are just they're just goofing around. Like, they don't.
Well, it has to be
okay. So anyways, if we lose again, Madden has to be on the hot seat. Then the next person mentions that person by name. Insert name is on his way to being the internet muscle flex of the week.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. So this is from Cubs Instagram.
That's awesome. Yeah. And there, it just happened.
They predicted it. That was prophetic. And
thank you, Pastor_Ship for nice. You know, spreading the internet muscle flex on Instagram. We appreciate that.
The gospel. Well,
yeah.
I have one more, and it comes from the same photo of young Rizzo, and it's from persons who's a Pittsburgh fan, and it ties to what we were talking about earlier. And they say, "For a team that hasn't won a ring in over 100 years, you guys have a really cocky fan base, probably because you're mostly riding the bandwagon."
Yeah, I saw a lot of that kind of stuff.
Again, on a picture of Anthony Rizzo as a 3-year-old. People are really talking smack about Rizzo. And, you know, most of the comments are from our lady friends and how amazing he is and how attractive he is. And
you know what that means, too, Kurt, is that they actually had to see it on Instagram. They had to click on read more comments, right?
Yeah.
Anthony Rizzo baby this is picture
way down, yeah,
and then decide to.
Like I said, it's most of the comments are totally just normal, what you'd expect stuff. Nothing crazy. Not people like talking smack about how good they are. That's cute, baby Rizzo.
Yeah, right. You know, I think like based on what we saw this weekend, I think Pirates fans might be more butthurt than Cardinal, like the best fans in baseball.
Does there need to be a Twitter account like? You know, about Pirates fans.
Probably.
Somebody can retweet them.
Probably. In the chat, just a bonus muscle flex. David in the chat, Patreon supporter David, says, "I like this one on the Rizzo pick. I couldn't believe the picture of @GrandpaRossi_3 as a child wasn't in black and white." And then Lauren chimes in with, "Nope, it's a cave drawing."
I don't know, man. I'm like the same age as him. I don't know if I like all this grandpa stuff.
If you were retiring, I think it's fair.
I like it because I'm 1 year younger. So,
yeah. And I don't want to rub it in.
And we only have to work like another 25 years. He gets to retire now.
Go hang out with his young kids.
I wish I could have a year long retirement party right now. But,
I just want the Rascal scooter.
Oh, man. All right, so as I said at the top of this episode, we're going to finish this episode with Katie Day's new version of her song, "By the Lakeside." I'm going to play it here at the very end. That way I'm not talking over it. It's a version I like it a lot. I've heard it, obviously. And we're premiering it here on the podcast. That's kind of cool. And so I'm going to put an embed. So if you go to ivmv.com on the show notes for this episode, There's going to be an embed there, and you can purchase this song through there. And for anyone, and I think, I don't know how much it costs, maybe a dollar, maybe you set your own price. If you set your own price, I don't know, give Katie a couple dollars. But what we decided to do, I talked to Katie today, and whoever purchases this, let's say by Tuesday night, if you purchase this before Tuesday midnight Pacific time, then your name will be entered into a drawing, and we'll choose one person, and you will get an IVMB shirt, and I will send it to you. So I really like this. I mean, I liked the original version of By the Lakeside, but this sounds really cool too. So go to IVMB.com, show notes for this episode, and click that link and purchase the song. And I think you can stream it there too, so if you'd like to hear it again. So thank you for downloading. This episode is brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. If you enjoy what we're doing here at IVMV, you can help us pay for the podcasting bills, help us upgrade equipment and help fund some of our meetup events. And you can do all that by checking out the Patreon campaign. You can get IVMV stickers, posters, pint glasses. There's also perks like access to our Patreon only Facebook group. And we're supposed to do monthly hangouts during Cubs games with patrons of certain levels. I kind of forgot about that. So we haven't done one yet this year, but we'll get one scheduled soon. And so you can check all that out at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. And or you can go to IVMV.com, and there's a Patreon link on the right side of the page. So we will be back with episode number 400. Can you believe that, guys? 400.
Can't believe it, but that's awesome.
Yes.
Time to retire.
And we have absolutely nothing special planned for number 400. I guess at this point, it's just kind of worth, let's just save it for 500. So, the Cubs, they play the Brewers this week, and they're heading up to Milwaukee. It's a Tuesday through Thursday series, so we'll most likely record Thursday night, so it'll be there for you Friday morning. So until then, here is Katie Day, and go Cubs.
It's been a long time coming, feeling like 100 years rain all summer, but something's in the air, I feel it, so baby you can dry your tears. Away, maybe I've lost my mind, thinking we could wear the crown. I think it's worth the fight, so don't you give up on me now. Cause when the gods decide it's about damn time, we're gonna pop champagne by the lakeside when the evening comes and the stars align. We're gonna pop champagne, gonna pop champagne by the lakeside. Talking about the hard time, tears cry that don't even mean a thing. It's on and up now, and I know how the heartbreak frustrates, but all of that was yesterday. It's gone away. Maybe I've lost my mind, just thinking we could tear it down. Cause when the gods decide it's about damn time, we're gonna pop champagne by the lakeside when the evening comes and the stars align. We're gonna pop champagne, gonna pop champagne by the lakeside. It's about damn time we're gonna pop champagne by the lakeside. When the evening comes and the stars align, we're gonna pop champagne, gonna pop champagne by the lakeside.